It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Especially the young people. What if I could, if I had the authority to do it, what if I could offer you and say, look, we're not doing such a good job in government these days. We make promises and we don't know about the future. But would you consider opting out of the whole system under one condition? You pay 10% of your income, but you take care of yourself. Don't ask the government for anything.
There he goes, fighting the fight at 40 past the hour. Joining us now from Texas, Republican congressman from that state and winner of the CPAC straw poll for the second straight year, Representative Ron Paul. And also with us, a New York editorial writer for the Washington Post and MSNBC contributor, Jonathan Capehart.
Jonathan Capehart,
there we go.
Finished in the top five.
Right.
In the CPAC
right.
voting, because
exactly.
You didn't know I was a conservative.
No,
what a great pairing.
Let's go to Congressman
good to have you.
Ron Paul first. And I want to talk about CPAC and congratulations. Congratulations on the victory, but let's talk about the order of business in importance, and I know you'll agree with me that most important is the fact that other than your son Rand Paul and Paul Ryan on good days and a few others, nobody in Washington is yet talking seriously about cutting spending, about Pentagon spending, entitlement spending, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. Congressman, what's it going to take for Washington to get serious?
Well, I think you have the right point there. Of course, I voted against all the budgets and all the appropriation bills for the 20-some years I've been there. But I've never expected them to get serious, and I don't expect them now to be serious. I use the analogy of addiction. You know, I think the treatment is wrong. I mean, the problem is there, and that is they spend too much and the deficit's too big. But they're treating this alcoholism like we're going to taper off. I think what we're going to do is have you gradually reduce the amount of drinking that you're going to do each day. And everybody knows that doesn't work. It doesn't work in politics either. You can't nibble away and say, well, we're going to cut a little food stamps here, a little Social Security here, a little foreign aid here. So I don't expect that to work. And I think the addiction is so bad that we're going to continue, and we are going to have a major, major economic crisis with the destruction of the dollar. You just can't keep these deficits going and printing the money. And I think it's too painful for the politicians. They don't want to take the heat. So even though the noise is getting louder and the Tea Party movement is there and demanding these cuts, even some people in the Tea Party movement, they don't want you to touch Social Security. They don't want you to touch anything other than Obamacare.
Well,
but do they want you to touch
the
medical care that Bush?
Right. I want to bring that
they
up.
Don't like the, they don't like the deficit. They don't like the deficits, and they'd like to see them cut, but they're not quite willing. Some of them are real Republican, and they wouldn't dare attack Bush's increase in medical care costs, you know, prescription health programs. So they treat the symptoms, and they don't look at it philosophically and knowing that we have to deal with the role of government, and that's a much bigger, broader problem. And that's why I think the young people are willing to look at it. The people I'm talking to are willing to look at the whole philosophy of it.
Well, one of the things that surprised me looking at the coverage of CPAC this weekend, we had your son on last week, and he's one of the only people that's actually out there that has the guts to tell the truth. You raised him well about the deficit, about entitlement programs, about cuts in Pentagon spending. This weekend at CPAC, when he talked about cutting Pentagon spending and entitlement spending, there were actually like boos at CPAC. And I keep wondering where these freshman Republican are that are supposedly Tea Party members, influenced by Tea Party members, and yet they won't talk about Pentagon spending or entitlement spending. I'm starting to wonder if our side, the Republican side, is going to get it wrong again.
Well, you know, John, I think what we have a problem here is with the semantics, because they have conditioned us all to use the word defense spending. Who wants to cut defense? I don't want to cut defense. I want a stronger defense. But they equate defense spending with militarism. I want to cut the militarism, the military-industrial complex, the interventionism, the stuff that hurts us, that makes us more vulnerable. So if we separated defense from militarism, maybe more people would be willing to accept it. But who wants to be on record for saying, oh, I just voted against the defense budget? But if you said, oh, I just voted against militarism and for support for people like Mubarak, you know, the people who we've supported, the dictators around the world, people say, hey, why do we do those kind of things? Oh, it's in national defense. So I think it's a perception and a semantics problem that we have to try to re-educate the people to understand what we're talking about.
Aren't we at a moment, Joe, though, with the budget or Mark Halperin, where both sides are sort of taking a moment to put out just a little bit and then a little bit more? I mean, isn't there some political football?
The fact is, they're only nibbling at 12% of
the budget.
They're not even
close.
This is not a serious conversation. It's embarrassing. I wonder, Congressman, what your response is to what Donald Trump said. Do you think you can be elected president?
Well, you always take that risk when you put your name on the ballot. You know, you could get elected. But you know the other thing is that's what they told me years ago, because, Joe, you've known me long enough that I've said the same things and voted the same way for many years. And they told me that when I first started running for Congress. There's no way you can run on that platform and run. You're just sort of obsessed with this Constitution, you know, and you live in the dark ages. You can't be elected. So I was elected 11 times. And somebody said, well, how many times has Donald Trump been elected? Does he have really the right to go and criticize others and saying they're unelected?
Yeah. So, touché.
And by the way, the second time he ran to get into Congress, Mark Halperin, you remember that, like I do, and you can see coming a mile away, the entire Republican establishment lined up against him. They also lined up against me in 94, but they lined up against him. They tried to kill him politically, and he won.
He won in his district. But, Congressman, I want to ask you, could you win nationally? Again, do your views have a majority of support in the United States of America that would allow you to get elected president? If you were the Republican nominee, could you beat Barack Obama?
Yeah. The reality is it would be very, very difficult. But I think the difficulty is more in getting Republicans to believe in small government. But if you look at the polls, and there aren't that many, my appeal is to a lot of independents and a lot of progressive Democrats who are sick and tired of Obama for, you know, opting out of cutting back on some of this militarism. He's a warmonger. He's expanding the war. So my support comes much broader. So my numbers would be much bigger running against Obama than they will be running against some conservative in the Republican primary. But the big thing is the numbers are growing. Even though I'm a pessimist on the short run, on the long run I'm optimistic, because there's a new generation coming, and they say this is an idea whose time has come. We need to be talking about what liberty really can offer to us in the foreign policy arena, in personal liberties, and then also, which conservatives all agree with, on the economic policies. So I think on a broad base, and when you look at the entire population, my numbers are much better.
We'll go ahead and finish that when we come back, because I want to make sure we get the whole thing. This is a theme that we went through before during the 2008 campaign for president, and I know they're going to repeat it again. We'll go over some of the articles that are on off of Fox News and a lot of the political blogs and such like that, because I know where this is going. They're going to anger a lot of people. They're going to anger them by saying, you have to take the beatings. The beatings will continue until morale improves. That's what's going on. And I you want to know how Egypt happens? This is exactly how this kind of stuff happens. Here we go. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Turn on the tube, what do I see? A whole lot of people dying, don't blame me. But point the crooked little fingers at everybody else. Spend all the time feeling sorry for themselves. Victim of this, victim of that. Your mama's too thin and your daddy's too fat. Get over it. Get over it.
Yeah, get over it, get over it, get over it, get over it, get over it. There's all kinds of truth being told everywhere. And the big bad guys, they go, you're not allowed to tell the truth. You're not allowed. You gotta propagate the lies. And what do we do here on Freedom's Phoenix? Uncovering the secrets, exposing the lies. That's what we do. Now, let me go ahead and read this to you over here. CPAC leaders, okay, this is by Kevin McCullough, and he's a syndicated national host, has 200 and something stations, and, you know, just really slinging it. And it goes on and on and on about how, you know, Ron Paul bad and Gary Johnson's bad and anybody that says libertarian freedom and stop wars and all that kind of stuff bad. So what does he say? If social conservatives are the largest portion of the conservative discussion, no attention should be paid to a poll that virtually eliminates their presence altogether. Because a lot of the conservatives, whoever the heck, you know, he was supporting, didn't get no support. So CPAC leaders did the best they could to put on the best conference possible. And I have to think, you know, is that why they wanted to give Defender of the Constitution Award to Rumsfeld, introduced by Dick Cheney? Is that their best effort? You know, I'm just, you know, these guys are killing me. You know, which is why, as soon as we heard that, I was like, why do we care what these people at CPAC say? You know, why do we care what, why do we care? I don't understand. I mean, it's just to give, I don't know. It's to make people feel better about something. But it was a big deal to Campaign for Liberty and Dr. Paul and Rand Paul, and they wanted to make sure they showed their strength there. Well, when they did, what do they do? What they always do. That doesn't count. Doesn't matter. We got invaded. Okay? Well, this is how the spin is. It's on, off of Fox News. It wasn't their fault that the libertarian elements within the attendees equate free speech with animalistic expressions, whatever the heck that means, especially when visiting someone else's house. Who's invited? I don't understand how this, whatever. Libertarian elements, because of their strange combination of policies that add up to anarchy without moral limits, don't mix with conservative ideals. And what the heck are those ideals? Theft, murder, enslavement. You know, you know, it's just, they deserve what they get. You know, as far as I'm concerned, scum bags. And because of that, perhaps they should have their own conference and let all the pot smokers and gay marriage supporters come and complain about how the U.S. shouldn't be fighting terrorists while they slander public servants. Slander public servants. Is that what they are? At the very least, the winner of their straw poll should be somewhat reflective of the title of who they are and what they believe. Because they like this word conservative. You know, they got it. They'll change it. They'll call it neoconservative or whatever. But it's the word conservative. And it doesn't mean, you know, what was it that Goldwater said? You know, he's supposed to be the big conservative father of. And Barry Goldwater said, you know, I don't come to, you know, tinker with government. Or I come to limit its size, you know, reduce it, kick its butt. You know, but they don't, that's not what this is about. It's about money. It's about control. Let's go ahead and finish up Dr. Paul here.
Jonathan Capehart, you do have progressive Democrats that disappointed the president for tripling the number of troops in Afghanistan, extending that war possibly another decade. That's what his generals want to do. We spend over $2 billion a week in this war. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that this issue is an issue that could have resonance in 2012.
Well, of course it can, because if the president's base, I mean, they're already upset with him over a host of issues. If they decide to sit the election out, stay home in the way that Democrats did, to use a very parochial example. You know, David Dinkins beat Giuliani here in New York in the mayor's race by 2%. When he ran for re-election, he lost by 2%, and largely because African-American voters stayed home.
Yeah.
So the president runs the risk of alienating progressive voters to the point where they just decide, you know what, he's disappointed me so much, I don't even want to go out and vote.
Isn't it fascinating the way Afghanistan just never comes up, really,
yes.
or in any of the conversations?
Yes.
And you know, because when we're talking about cutting the defense budget as well, does that mean we're going to continue with the wars, but that the soldiers themselves are going to have lousy equipment and lousy backup? It seems to me that, you know, if we're going to cut budget, we better also get out of Afghanistan.
Well, Ron Paul, that is, we had a report this past week. Petraeus has a long-term strategy to stay in Afghanistan. This president, you know, first he was going to be out in 11, it was 14. We're going to be there a long time.
Yeah, it's foolhardy. That's going to be part of the reason the empire will come down. But, you know, let me remind a few people that Republicans used to have a position closer to mine. Just think on, I remember when Eisenhower was elected, was to stop the Democrat war in Korea. When Nixon was elected, he was supposed to stop the Democrat war in Vietnam. So there's a strong tradition. Unfortunately, after 9/11, the Republicans became the warmongers and said that we have to fight war endlessly, and so therefore we didn't have a Republican leader that would challenge the Democrats on the war. Right now you need a Republican that will challenge Obama on the war issue and on civil liberties. Here's an administration that has endorsed assassinations. He still endorses secret prisons. He loves the Patriot Act, but you need a Republican that truly believes in individual liberty, and I think they can provide a real challenge to Obama.
All right, Representative Ron Paul, thank you very much. It's great to have you on the show. Tina Brown, thank you as well.
Yep. You know, we've been, a lot of us that were, you know, nose to the grindstone back in the 08 presidential election cycle. Yeah, we already know where this goes. Keep in mind, it's amazing how fast 4 years go by, because it was right now. It was right now, February, that we were opening up our first Ron Paul Revolution or Lovolution workshop or whatever you want to call it. We had that set up within 3-4 weeks from the time that we found that, you know, Ron Paul might consider creating a committee to explore the possibility of I might run. And I just go, yeah, I know where this is going. Boom, boom, boom. We get it done. Yeah, we got morphs in there booming. Now, the thing is that we knew that if we just started, you know, allowing people to express themselves, it was going to get stupid. Well, it did. But I knew another thing. People that had some kind of confidence in what they were told in junior high in their social studies classes, right when they're starting to go through puberty, right when they're starting to question authority, is when they need to get you in on the plantation. This is how you express your rebellion, you know, with a voter registration card and you know, go do signs and support the system, you know, of freedom and everything. And I go, look, they're going to learn exactly the same thing I did when I was their age, that it's all BS, that it's all pretend, it's all made, and we're going to get to see it again. How do we take advantage of this again? Well, what if I just ignore them and we just go to the Middle East and infect an entire culture in Arabic? Oh, we're like hours away from being done with our translations. And then it's going, oh yeah, Cato, they're sending me 250 translations of the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights. Right, not later. They ship them today. Oh.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with Ernie's got his voice back. She's back. And my mind's clear, too. I tell you what happened. This is virus thing, man. It just, you know, suck all the motivation, everything out of you. I'm like, it was all I could do, muster up there for a week or so, you know, just to get down here. And this morning, I got out late because we're loading, unloading, doing kind of, you know, moving stuff. And so I was probably going to be here like 10 minutes before the top of the hour, and it starts six after. But there was a wreck on the highway because I moved a little bit further away. It takes like 15 minutes if there's no problem. If there is, it could be hours. Well, I called Sierra and I said, get everything all ready. You know, I'm taking the surface streets. Boom, I get off. That street's closed, the construction. And I'm going, oh, you're going to have to do the show. You have to start the show, Sierra. Because I thought I had Sabelle Edmonds. She's coming on top of the second hour. And I thought she was at top of the first hour. Yeah, I'm not rescheduling her doing Sabelle. You can talk to Sabelle. And she's like, no. She goes, she's second hour anyway. And I go, oh, okay. Well, start off, and I'll get in. I came in like a minute after it started. You know, the Ron Paul thing from you know, Morning Joe on MSNBC, because I wanted to play that anyway. So we just started off with that because it's just so representative of what I know. And it's not going to be in the same atmosphere as it was in 08. Because keep in mind, when it started 4 years ago, it was right when it was starting to get shaky. You know, 06, beginning of 07, you know, it's kind of, yeah, there might be some correction. There'll be a correction in the housing market and this and that and so on. But we knew here in Phoenix, man, inventories were, you know, going way up on housing. They're on the market for a lot longer. The math didn't work. And you're closing all kinds of jobs. It's like it's on purpose. You know, you look at it and you go, well, they know this is going to happen when they do this, right? Probably. Either they just don't care and they're just trying to extend their, you know, time at the trough, or they're actually trying somewhere up top. Somebody is trying to just, you know, grind us into the dirt with their heel. And the heel of tyranny has, you know, a lot of ramifications. Well, Dr. Paul was making this clear during his campaign. That's why I support his run in 2012. Not that I'm going to run out and, you know, vote for anybody or say go vote or any of that crap. You know, it's just another speaking tour. Oh, what kind of impact do you think it had? The Levolution went worldwide. You know, we're already going outside the borders. This is not just we're bringing in more troops. They'll start talking about in the Middle East going, well, we're going to this and that and everything, and they'll make rookie mistakes and they'll do a lot of different stuff. They think they're going to work within a system. I'm going, man, you don't get it, do you, troop? You know, it's not about a collective beating up another collective with unlimited resources of the planet. You know, it's not just the United States. It's like the Western banking. You know, like even China. You know, this is all, it's a big, giant them versus individuals. And whoever they, them, those are, you know, it's those won't leave you alone. A lot of people, I tell you what it was. It was December 31st, 2002. I wrote a guest article for Lou Rockwell. I had just written something about something I observed here. I had my pizza restaurant, family restaurant here, and I could see the speculation was getting really heavy and so on. It's in 03. I just sold my restaurant. You know, it's February 03. I started the radio program and so on. And I could see what was happening. I'm going, oh, I went through this speculative bubble before. It was the late 80s, you know, before the savings and loan thing blew up here in Phoenix. But why do you think Phoenix is the worst in the country for the devaluation of homes? You know, how many is on the market? What the loss, the drop was? You know, the recovery is going to be slower. Why? You know, because, you know, we got our own share of corruption here, but a lot of people move here and so on. There was a lot of speculation. And I saw it coming. You used to Ernest Hancock, Lou Rockwell come up. And I'm going, it was, sell your house now. That's what it was. I'm like, sell your house. Now, of course, if anybody took my advice, they'd been really pissed off at me because it went up. You know, I mean, it went up. But for the same reasons it went down like I knew it would, because it was all this speculation. Well, what they did to fuel it even more is that, you know, what they do, they reduced the interest rates down to almost nothing. They keep this bubble going. Well, I didn't anticipate. I don't know enough about, you know, economics and whatever. I could just see what was happening on the ground and what it was a precursor to. And I described it in this long article. And Lou asked me to go ahead and, like, you know, dress it up and spell stuff right and everything. And he put it up. So I did. And he put it as before Freedom's Phoenix. Well, in that article, I made it very clear. These are the things that happened before, and then this is what happened. These are the things that they're repeating now, and this is what's going to happen. Well, the bubble went on longer than I thought, but the same thing happened. It crashed. So here we could see right when it started to crash is when Dr. Paul started running, and he was describing exactly what was happening and why. Well, now it's happened. And for the same principled reasons, it's going to get worse. Well, what did he just say on MSNBC? On Joe Morning Joe? He's going, look, they're attacking symptoms. They're not attacking this philosophically. They're not looking at it rationally, reasoned, you know, and say, hey, you know, the role of government, it'd be messed up. No, it's how much we can drag it out further, make sure we keep getting our checks. Because who do you think's in charge? The people in charge are the ones getting the money. You know, and you'll pick your poison. I mean, how many congressmen does Israel own with our tax money and foreign aid going to them? What about other countries? What about China? Heck, I remember what started me getting involved in this and international trade and everything, my father's company and so on. I'll tell you what it was. It was Japan. Japan controlled the U.S. trade representatives. They negotiated the trade deals, and then right after it was done and signed, these guys left and went and worked for Japan. It was like 60 Minutes thing on it. I knew. I saw it happening. Up like this. You know, you think we can't see what's happening? Of course we can. They're just, you know, saying, no. Them damn libertarians, they're taking over the conservative, our little party over here at CPAC. Do you think that it's the leadership up top, the shiny badgers, that are taking it over? When you start giving out awards defending the Constitution to Rumsfeld, introduced by Cheney, and you got people yelling from the auditorium that you're a warmonger and scumbags and pieces of crap? I mean, what'd you think was going to happen? But a lot of people just left. They're like, you know, out of respect, hey man, you know, I can't say nothing nice. I'm just going to go out here and drink beer. You know, I've been in many conferences. Heck, I've been to Libertarian National Conventions when that happens. You know, Barr goes in. You know what we did? We'll see it. There was a campaign at the Libertarian National Convention of, how was it, 10, where it said, see you at the bar. When Bob Barr was speaking, we all went to the bar. You know, Jordan Page played. You know, I gave a speech. Some other people, you know, I didn't, nobody organized it. Just see you at the bar. We're done. We're, you know, instead of yelling at you, we're just not going. So it's half empty. This is, you know, the people fighting back inside the system. What they should be thankful for is that people are even thinking of using any kind of system, because a lot of things are coming. Let me go ahead and show you this. Today on Freedom's Phoenix, you know, we have Bill Bonner. Now, Bill Bonner, one of the Agora Financial guys, along with Addison Wiggins, they did the book, The Empire of Debt, okay? So this is, they've known this for years. Charles Goyette and I had him on Charles' show many times. We knew this, called crossing the Rubicon, man. You know, once you cross certain lines, you know, you can just kind of kiss it goodbye. You know, philosophically, you're already invaders. Well, Bonner talks about what happens when the black swans appear. Now, what that's in reference to, you should go read the article. I mean, it's kind of some scary stuff. And he doesn't get into all the details and everything. He's just talking about, Rabini, I think it was, wrote, or Talib. I can't remember. Anyway, there's a book called The Black Swan. And what it meant is that nobody's ever seen, you know, a black swan right up until they see one. And, you know, they're always white, you know, they're always, you know, things. And then all of a sudden, from out of the blue, there's a black swan there. It's kind of like the reverse of an albino swan, I guess. When this happens, very rare, but when it happens, it happens. We'll talk about black swan events when we come back, because they're coming up, right? Not later. We'll talk about it when we come back in just a little bit.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Stop me now. I'm having such a good time. I'm having a ball. Stop me now.
The Black Swan, the impact of highly improbable, you know, things that happen. You know, with a new section on robustness and fragility. Now, this, is, yeah, the guy is Nassim Nicholas Taleb. Yeah, no, Taleb, so I want to make sure I got that right. Now, The Revolution in Egypt and Where to Be When Black Swans Appear by Bill Bonner. You know, this is something you know, they had it published at Daily Reckoning. We have a lot of stuff from them also. Now, I'm telling you, you know, this is really good stuff for you to go read. You go to the top of Freedom's Phoenix right now, and Bill Bonner, B-O-N-N-E-R, if you put in his name and the Revolution in Egypt, it'll come up for those of you that aren't seeing it on the video screen. Now, let me go ahead and read just a couple of paragraphs of this, and you kind of get an idea where he's going with this. Not much action in the stock market on Friday. Gold didn't do much either. The big news was the Hosni Mubarak called it quits. After supporting him for three decades, the U.S. threw him under the tank. Yep, that's one way of putting it. I'm going to make this bigger. Almost everywhere, except the Mubarak household, people rejoiced. We were surprised that they had an opinion one way or the other. We got emails from strangers telling us that a hopeful development this was, what a hopeful development this was, or how free elections might be coming next. Typical was the report in the Washington Post. Mubarak became the second Arab leader in a month to succumb to his people's powerful thirst for freedom. Thirst for freedom? If Egyptians were thirsty for freedom, they must be like camels. They only need a drink of it once every 30 years. Mubarak ruled for three decades. Egyptians went without quenching their powerful thirst for freedom through the 80s, the 90s, and the 2000s. Apparently, they only needed to bring the cup to their lips this year. Many spoke of the jubilant crowds and the idealistic youth behind the peaceful revolution. We were tempted to mention the jubilant crowds that attended the execution of Louis XVI or the idealistic youth who gathered to jeer at Nicholas II when he and his family were shipped off to Yekaterinburg, where they would be murdered along with their valet and even the cook. Mubarak left office on Friday. The army took control on Saturday. On Sunday, the generals dissolved parliament. Revolutions don't always turn out well. The French Revolution was a good time to be in England. The Russian Revolution was a good time to be almost anywhere other than Russia. Even the American Revolution was a good time to be elsewhere, too. And then, when Americans finally got their freedom from Britain, they almost immediately began shackling one another. Tax rates had been only about 3% when the English ran the colonies. Now, the federal rate is 11 times as much. And for every injustice done to Americans by the British, there must be 100 they have done to themselves. But revolutions happen. Where should you be now? We don't know, but we suggest that you have a bolt hole somewhere, a refuge, a getaway, a family stronghold. Many things could go wrong. Earthquakes, plagues, volcanic eruptions, wars, bankruptcies, hyperinflations. And we wouldn't rule out invasions from space. These events are hard to predict. Even something as obvious as the revolution in Egypt was unforeseen by almost everyone. We pay the CIA hundreds of billions to keep on top of things exactly like this. But as one journal put it sarcastically, CIA forecasts suck. Here at the Daily Reckoning, however, we take up for the CIA, just as we would stand up for any drunk or halfwit. The CIA's work is at least on par with the SEC or Amtrak. We have no doubt about it. It is at least as efficient as a post office. It is as necessary as a TSA, and it is as competent and effective as the Congressional Ethics Committee. But we do not take up pen today to criticize America's intelligence agencies. Instead, we merely point out that bad stuff happens. What kind of bad stuff? All kinds. Kinds you'd expect and kinds you don't. The problem with bad stuff is that it often comes in drag, pretending to be something it is not. A peaceful revolution, for example, can turn bloody mighty fast. And no one gives you advance notice. Real trouble comes unannounced. If you knew that the dollar would collapse on the 3rd of June, for example, you could switch your money into euros. If the Irish prime minister called you on the phone and tipped you off, hey, we're going to default next Thursday, you'd know what to do. You'd short the euro and make a bundle. Or if you intercepted a secret cable, nuclear attack on Washington, D.C., 4 p.m. October 13th, you'd get out of town as soon as possible. But black swans do not honk before they appear. They just appear. We've spent a lot of time anticipating disaster. There will be a collapse of the international monetary system, for example. It is almost inevitable, but it is still unpredictable. We can't say when or how it will come about. Likewise, much higher inflation rates are coming, and a huge sell-off in government bond markets. Those things will provoke widespread financial disasters, possibly leading to riots, revolutions, and other bad stuff. It is possible that these financial calamities will cause a major economic disruption like the collapse of the Roman Empire. In the chaos, trading networks could fall apart. Trading networks could fall apart and take many decades to rebuild. GDP growth could turn negative and remain in the red for years. Developed regions could slide backward for generations. Emerging markets could explode. Who knows what would happen? We see trouble coming, but we can't tell you exactly what color wig it will be wearing, when it will get here, or what it will do when it arrives. And then there are the disasters that are impossible to see coming at all. For example, our old friend Mark Farber includes an essay on cybersecurity in his latest newsletter. Whether we acquiesce or not, our lives are determined by technology and computer systems. Our electric grids, nuclear systems, water supplies, financial institutions, fuel systems, communication systems, as well as our governments are directed by technological systems which are subject to attack or disruption. Apparently, the cyber attackers are well-funded. Very sophisticated groups engage in serious warfare all the time. For the moment, they are outgunned by the forces of law and order, led by the USA. But imagine what happens when the USA runs out of money. How long will it take for the attackers to get ahead technologically? With all the billions and billions of dollars worth of capital in the world and the millions of people with high-tech computer skills, it seems like a matter of time before a serious black swan event occurs. One thing about cyber war makes it especially attractive to low-budget terrorists. It costs relatively little to maintain a serious threat. No battleships necessary, no billion-dollar fighter jets, no nuclear deterrent. In fact, with the right team of software geniuses, it may be possible to turn a nation's own nuclear capacity against itself. The U.S. Department of Defense classified military computer networks were attacked in 2008 at a military base in the Middle East. An infected flash drive was inserted into a U.S. military laptop, presumably by a foreign intelligence agency. The code uploaded itself to a network run by U.S. Central Command, spreading undetected in classified and unclassified systems, creating a digital source from which data could be transferred to computer systems under foreign control. In other words, when it comes to bad stuff, the sky is the limit. It's going to happen eventually, one way or another, and it could be real bad. And when bad stuff happens, you're better off being somewhere else. Where? Generally, bad stuff seems to happen most often in cities. Why is that? Cities are where most people live. It's where governments are. And it is where the labor force is most specialized. There are no subsistence farmers living in cities, nor do urban populations live off the land. Instead, they depend on complex networks of commerce. The typical city dweller produces neither food nor energy. He sits all day in an office, completely dependent on others to provide power and food. Then he goes home, still completely dependent on the division of labor for most of his most important needs. Progress can be described as the elaboration of the division of labor. In man's most primitive state, specialization is extremely limited. From what we've been told, the early man was the hunter, early woman gatherer. That was about the extent of it. As the tribe grows larger, specialization increases. One person might tend the fire, another might be in charge of making clothes or arrows. The advent of sedentary agriculture and towns caused a big leap forward in human progress, and not coincidentally, the division of labor. Some townspeople went out to tend the fields. Others began to focus in on woodworking or ironmongering or making weapons or clothes. Some played cards and hung around in bars. There was soon a home building industry, and not long after, merchants, prostitutes, and bankers, and even shyster lawyers and tax collectors. Well, let me tell you what's happening. The Black Swan is coming. Are you going to be ready? Oh, go to Freedom's Phoenix front page now. Here in Mesa, we're going to be interviewing this guy. He's got a hydroponic old pool turned into greenhouse fish and poultry vegetable system going right now. Oh, it's going to be about off-grid living in your backyard. Are you ready? Are you ready? You're going to need to be. I guarantee it. Stay tuned. Sabella Edmonds is next.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what Readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. Readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. Corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears has already matured.